This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
You have to show your child that putting yourself last is not the way to go.
You're listening to Jeans and an Ice Top, your go-to podcast when it comes to navigating adulting and the big life stuff. With me, Chels. With no guidebook, most of us are fumbling through life, trying to remember to take the bins out, with no real idea what we want to do career-wise, what on earth love is, and did anyone mention taxes? Through some oversharing, way too many cups of coffee, and some little nuggets of advice, I hope to make the existential crisis that bit more bearable by reminding you that you're not alone. And sometimes, it's about focusing on the things we can control and keeping things simple, like jeans and a nice top.
Hey, 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 and welcome to the penultimate episode of the second season of the podcast. What the hell? How did we get here? I do not know. For those of you that have made it through this season, thank you for coming to the journey with me. We are ending on a real high with the most wholesome, oh, just soulful, beautiful human being that is Mary Thomas. She speaks from the heart. She shares in depth her experience through the journey of becoming a mother and how that has changed not only her relationship with herself, but her relationship with how she shows up in the world. And that actually this little bundle of joy is a reminder to keep some love back for her too. This episode is so relatable, so honest and pure, and it's just a beautiful one to end on. It's an honor. And I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. As always, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Follow me on Instagram at smiletohealth and keep an eye out for a cheeky competition coming soon. Oi, oi. Oh, and if you like poetry, check out my book on Amazon. It's called Curse to Feel. Ciao. Hey team, and welcome to another episode of Jeans and a Nice Top podcast. And this week, we are blessed with the absolute goddess that is Mary Thomas, aka Mary Thomas Wellness. She's a registered nurse, health coach, yoga instructor, YouTuber, and most importantly, mother to the beautiful Polly. I am so excited for you to hear her story, a really well-rounded, just beautiful perspective on life. I think we've all got a lot that we can learn from someone like Mary. I'm just blessed to have her presence here today. But for those that don't know you, tell us who you are and what you do.
Oh, I'm blushing. Thank you for the cute little intro. Well, you pretty much summed me up in a nutshell. I mean, I am someone that likes to wear many hats. So I have all those things, and I'm also a wife to my husband, Bo.
How long have you guys been together now? I feel like I followed your story so long.
Oh my goodness, Bo and I have a crazy love story. Okay, so officially we've been together for 7 years come October, but before that we were on and off for like five. I don't know, in total we've been together since 2010, on and off.
Wow.
But married for 2 years. Yeah, we have a crazy love story, but we're here.
Oh, love prevails. I'm here for it.
It really does.
Such a hopeless romantic.
Same. And we have like the best love story. He's my forever love. You know, when you go through life, you have, you know, your first love and you have, you know, I don't know. If you watch Sex and the City, how they talk about great love.
Carrie Bradshaw is my idol in life. She's
I know, right?
To be.
Anyways, he's like my big love. He's my great love. So,
oh, that's so lovely.
Seriously, love is the best. I'm also a stay-at-home mum working online. I have an online business that I help mentor and coach. Women and families who want to work online. And yeah, so I just kind of do that on the side as well. And yeah, but pretty much my main thing is I'm a mum and I love it. And that's my main gig and it's the best.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a beautiful gift that is. It's interesting because I love the fact that, like you said, you're a woman of many hats and you do a lot of different careers. And that's definitely something I aspire to do rather than just to be like a 9 to 5, one job, one day. Did you, when you were younger, did you think that that's where you'd end up? Or was it something that kind of organically came as you went along?
I think it started as a young age anyway. Like I was always doing everything. I remember, you know, I was an only child, grew up as an only child. So yeah, so I had no siblings. I was always doing so many different extracurricular activities, like all sport. I was very sporty, very athletic. And I remember just being at school all the time and just never being able to decide what I wanted to do when I grew up. Like I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to be an athlete. It's like all these things were so in a completely different category, but I wanted to do it all. And so I guess that's Yeah. So I guess when it came to the point where I had to decide whether what career I wanted to do, you know, nursing, I just kind of fell into the lap of nursing. But I guess growing up, but the further I got into adulthood, the more I realized that, hey, wait, I don't have to do a 9-to-5. Like, I don't have to. Society is not the boss of me. I was always very much a free thinker and a bit of a free spirit. So I decided, yeah, just to do what I wanted to do. Like, I feel like life is too damn short not to do what makes you happy. You don't have to do 9-to-5. You could do a 9-to-5, but you could also have like a Saturday job, or you could do an after work job. Like, there's so many things.
Absolutely. And I find as well, like, I think that's such an important message out there, because don't get me wrong, I've got friends that thrive off the 9-to-5. They love an office environment.
Yeah, totally.
Consistency. But I think for people like us who are very creative by nature, like you said, free spirit, it just doesn't work. And I just find that I'm so much happier when I've got multiple streams of income. I'm constantly challenged in lots of different areas. Otherwise, my brain just flatlines. It's like I can't then consistently stay on like top of my game in that job or that area if I'm not enjoying it. Like you said, I think one of the biggest pieces of advice we should be taking into like adulthood, in inverted commas.
No, it's like adulthood.
Literally, like, what is that? Do we grow up?
Yes.
Except as a Peter Pan syndrome. Yeah, like, happiness should be key, right?
Yeah, and I totally agree. It's like some people actually do really thrive. Like my husband, he thrives on it. He loves that stability. He loves routine. Whereas I'm a bit more like, meh, I don't want to do that today. I'm going to do this. And yeah, it's the creative types. Like it's, yeah, and I feel like you should just always follow your intuition, and if something's calling you to try it, then do it.
Because you did yoga teacher training as well, didn't you? You taught yoga.
Yeah, I did. I did that in 2017. I did that in India, actually, because Bo and I, as you mentioned before, we traveled and we were in India for 6 weeks, and I just fell in love with the country, and I just always wanted to do my yoga teacher training there. So I went back there to Rishikesh and did the training there, and I've been a yoga teacher ever since at a cool little studio. Actually, sort of a little studio. It's a huge studio here in Geelong where I live. So I do that, which is really cool.
I love it. I've got 2 months left of my yoga teacher training. I'm doing it over 6 months because I decided to do it when COVID happened. So I couldn't do my dream of India or Bali, but I'm doing it with this incredible instructor. And it's like it's a week every month, which is actually probably best for me because I'm always doing a million things. But I didn't realize how much it would offer me as an individual learning how to teach. Like it's completely transformative because I'm a dancer, but I hate teaching it. But then yoga, I think it's not about just showing the moving on. It's giving
so much more, isn't it?
Yeah, it is so much more.
I bet India was really magical.
Oh, it was intense. It was like, I can't even explain that experience today. It still was such a transformative time in my life. I'm so glad I did it and I learned so much from it. And yeah, I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't do it, I guess, today, because it taught me so much about myself and my body and my mind and my confidence as well. And so many things. Yeah. As you know too.
So much.
It's like all the things.
Well, one question that I'm asking everyone this season is, what are three things you can't live without in adult life? And everyone's kind of taken this as like a desert island situation. It wasn't how I intended it, but it's kind of where it's gone. So if you're going to be taken to a desert island, what three things would you like to take? It can be people. It can be, some people have said like sports. One person said the gym. Someone said chocolate. But you only get three.
Okay, three. Of course, my husband and my baby. I have to choose those two because I could not live without them.
Yeah.
And it'd be water, I guess. Is there water on the island?
Yeah.
It's a desert island.
So like an island that's in the middle of nowhere. So you're surrounded by the ocean.
You can't drink ocean water.
No, this is very true. But you can swim in it.
Okay, this is getting way too technical. Okay, just if water was there and it was a given, it would be chocolate. So yes.
Amazing.
Because I'm addicted.
Well-rounded. Yeah. Me too. Have you got a favorite brand?
My favorite chocolate right now would be this one. It's from Aldi. Mm-hmm. It's called, it comes in a blue packet and it's dark chocolate sea salt flavored. Do you know it?
Whoever came up with this combination of dark chocolate sea salt is the most, I want
no,
to
genius.
Be their best friend. Yeah.
Genius, right? Like who would have thought?
Who thought this through? I know.
So I don't know the name. It's like I have it every single day, but I just can't think of the name right now. But
it's always the way.
I'll think of it. It's always the
way. But dark chocolate sea salt. Wedding comes.
Yeah, we that's it. The one.
And it's natural, I think, for me and you to speak about like food and the foodie life, because that's kind of how we came into contact in the first place, in the whole kind of wellness space. But I love the fact that recently your whole Instagram has taken a complete transition. So I'm sure you won't mind me saying, but originally your name was Matchels and Rangos, and you were heading So Forever. And recently you've transitioned across to Mary Thomas Wellness. I'd love to know kind of what your thought process was behind that, the journey through it, and how you're kind of transforming, how your Instagram is like transforming with you.
Well, I guess because I originally started Matchels and Mangos like, 7 years ago, I think it was 2014. Is that 7 years? Yeah, crazy. Yeah, it just was like forever ago. And I started it because I wanted to share my journey into, you know, a plant-based lifestyle or veganism, and just to share my journey on overcoming PCOS, anxiety, and mainly an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And I guess over time, as I healed and grew and changed and evolved, as you do as a human, the name kind of didn't evolve with me. Like I kind of felt trapped by that name, and I kind of felt trapped that I was only limited to what I could share or what I could talk about, because that if it was in relation to that kind of name or that identity that I'd created originally. Mm-hmm. And I guess becoming a mum, I don't know, just changing my whole perspective on so many things in life, I just wanted a change. I just wanted a name that was me, that I was my brand. Obviously, I couldn't choose Mary Thomas because that's like the most common name ever. And everyone is Mary Thomas. So I chose a pillar that was a solid foundation of like my life, which has always been wellness. I feel like wellness is in every single part of my life. It's something that we always strive to find and to do and to be. So I kind of felt like, the transformation from Matchels and Mangos to Mary Thomas Wellness was just an organic one that came with the evolution of my life and my identity as, who I am now. And as a human, we're always changing identities. We're always growing and evolving, because that is the human experience, right?
Absolutely.
And, I just didn't want to be, not that your name says defines you, but
I feel like I understand, because I think on social media, it's so interesting, because like you said, it's almost like you're mini celebrities, right? So you create this identity and this idea of who you are, and they associate it with the name and the kind of brand that you've built through these little grids. And it's crazy how much, like you said, that when you go, as you grow up, you could, I went through an absolute like hippie phase where I was always in like really multicolored and baggy trousers and feathers in my hair. And then I went through a bit of a like emo phase. I was wearing band t-shirts, and now I'm like this weird amalgamation of all of these personalities I've adopted over the years. But that changes all the time. But for some reason, Instagram doesn't hold space for that change and that transition. And you have to almost announce it when you're making that move. But I think
you do this. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you have to literally announce it, everything that you do. And if you do something that's different to what you're known for, it's like people revolt. It's like, what? What is this? Why are you doing this? This is not what you do. That's not who you are. It's like, dude, I'm a human. I change. If you don't like that, if you don't like what I'm doing, then don't follow me. Like, but there's so much pressure. You can't just do that. It's so hard just to brush it off.
Absolutely.
Because, it's this pressure. It's pressure and it's identity. And I'm really trying to learn now as being a mother and, I guess, stepping into this new role of, a mother. I have to have boundaries, and I have to know that.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter what other people think. Like, I just have to be confident.
100%. Confidence is key, and like owning your space and knowing that it's actually a privilege for the world to be given that little snippet of the little corner of the world that you occupy, and actually you can pick and choose what to share. And I think that's an important reminder in a world where everything seems to have to be out there in the public. I definitely have to learn that as well, in different ways. But did you find that your kind of persona online and this brand that you created impacted your initial kind of step into motherhood?
It really did, I guess, in a way that I felt a lot of pressure on how I was going to raise Polly with the identity that I had created for myself and the kind of people I associated myself with, like all that kind of stuff and what I had built my brand on. Yeah, so I felt a lot of pressure in the way that, yeah, I was going to raise her and what kind of mother I would be. And becoming a mother is hard enough, let alone being on social media.
Yeah, no. But I bet Connie's really changed your attitude towards health and wellness in itself.
Yes.
Do you think that she's taught you any, what would you say are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned from your gorgeous little girl?
Oh, she's taught me so much. I swear, children are born to teach us and we're just there to follow them and go, we're just following them along for the ride. Like, she's just amazing. I guess I had, well, you would know we had a history of eating disorders and that kind of stuff. And she's taught me to love myself unconditionally because the way that she looks at me and the way that she needs me and wants me is just this love that I'd never thought I'd be worthy of or I never thought I deserved. And it's just taught me to love myself in a whole new way. And also that I was part of the vegan movement. And I have shifted more of a plant-based lifestyle in the last year or two. Just before I fell pregnant, actually, I started introducing a few different things that were just, it's just what my body intuitively wanted and needed, I guess. Absolutely. And that was to prepare me for pregnancy and for pregnancy as well. And she just taught me that everyone is different, everyone is unique, and not one thing is going to suit everybody.
Absolutely.
And it's just, yeah, and it's just taking away that guilt and that I'm just doing my best. I'm doing what's best for my daughter, what I think is best for my daughter. And yeah, she's teaching me a lot. And boundaries. She's teaching me about boundaries.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Because I
not have them with a child.
I know, but I am a type A people pleaser. Like, I am legit. Yeah. Yes, I'll do it. I'll make it work. What works for you? Or like, I'm here for you 24/7. It's like, no, like I can say no, I can assert my boundaries, I can assert my wants and my needs, and I can set a line and set limits and things like that. So yeah, she's taught me that.
Oh, and is that endless? Like, you're pulling these little nuggets of gold all of the time and you're literally like, why did you even come up with that? Or like, how are you doing this? They're like these little philosophers that just like tutor around with no idea, like dribbling on everything, but offering us all the thickest knowledge and like joy. It's madness. And I'm so fascinated by the idea of like a mother and the mother archetype, because it's not like in my immediate future at the moment, but I have so many people that have always wanted children. It's something that's so important to them and key to their life. My friend also actually just got diagnosed with PCOS, so I'd love to dive deeper into kind of your journey with that, and because I know that there's often a lot of fear around that and conception and kind of your journey into like pregnancy, your birth story. You share so much online in such a beautiful, honest way, and I'd love to delve deeper, like, on the podcast about that.
Yeah, sure. So I've always wanted to be a mum. It's like literally the one thing I wanted to do my entire life. Just from a young age.
And nurturing human. I bet you've always adopted those. Like, were you the mother in the friendship group?
I always was. I was always like, yeah, it's so hard to explain. I was always very like motherly and very like, yeah, very nurturing. And I'll make this Mother Mary.
Mother Mary.
So well-fitting. Literally. And it's just something, yeah, I've always wanted to do. And I think it stems from, yeah, not having my mum around growing up. Mm-hmm. You kind of want to fill a gap, but not that I wanted to fill a gap, but you kind of do. Like, you want to have the thing that you never had, right? Because you don't know what you're missing and you want to find out what you've been missing. Yeah. Does that make sense? Makes sense totally. In my head. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like whatever is, it's like, for example, I'm an only child. So I know that when I'm older, I'd want multiple children because I have children around me. Whereas my friends who grew up with loads of people around them need to be on their own because they're like, oh, I can't. I've always been surrounded. Yep. You always kind of want the gap. Try and repeat that in your lifestyle.
Yes. That's the one. Yeah. Perfectly said, actually. So I was about, I think it was 22 when I got diagnosed with PCOS. I'd had a really irregular period, amenorrhea, like no period at all, acne, weight gain. I'd just gone off the pill. I wanted to know what was going on. So I went and got some ultrasounds done and they found cysts on my ovaries. And yeah, they say I'm diagnosed with PCOS. I was absolutely shattered because the doctor literally said to me, she's like, oh, are you in a serious relationship? Like, do you plan on having children soon because you should probably have kids sooner than later because you're going to have lots of trouble having children, or you might need help, or you might not be able to have them at all. So,
and that's such a mic drop as well.
Yeah.
And it's something that's so important to you to then kind of have this. I feel like that sometimes doctors just have no bedside manner.
No bedside manner.
And you're like, there's another way to say that. Like, ease me in a little bit.
Yeah. And when 22, you know, I was like going out every weekend. I was like into fun, you know, I was into my friend, like, you know, it's a time when your friends, wasn't even on my horizon to have children anytime soon. So I was like freaking out. And I remember calling my dad and saying like, oh, I don't know if I'd be able to have kids. Like, I'm so sorry. I might not be able to give you grandchildren. But you know, so it was really scary. It was kind of like, what just happened? But I didn't let it get to me that much because I was 22 and, you know, I had different priorities then. I was kind of like, oh, you know what? I'll deal with it when I'm older. I kind of had that kind of attitude.
I totally relate to that mindset in that I think there's definitely a difference between your early 20s and your later 20s. Because your early 20s are like, sod it, I'll deal with it and, like, you know what I can do. And then, like, I mean, I'm just easing into my later 20s. So I turned 26 this year. And already I'm like, maybe I... you know, I need to eat some green things every now and then, you know? Like, sleep actually is important. Like, you need it to function. Yep. You can't just rely on coffee chills. Like, you need a balance.
Yeah, it's like, maybe I should start using anti-aging cream.
Yeah. Like, you're in denial. You're like, it's fine. And then, all the like, okay, I'm going to buy some Retinol. Like, I need that. Especially because I'm such a smiler.
Yeah.
I'm going to get serious sometimes. Like, I'm going to be such a roomy raisin. Like, there's no way out of
this. I literally just bought retinol the other day because I saw this meme on Instagram and it was like, if you recognize these four things, it's time to buy retinol cream. And it was like a Spice Girls album, a tattoo choker, just stuff from the 90s. And I was like, okay, it's time for me to get some anti-aging stuff. So I was like, I need it. Okay, this meme gets me. It's telling me to get my life in order. So
yeah, it works in mysterious ways.
It really does. So and then I kind of went about my life, and then obviously Bo and I met. Well, Bo and I had already met prior to this, but we went together with he was away at this point. Oh gosh, I could do a whole podcast on just me and Bo's love story, really.
I know. I think to get you on for a 2.0.
I reckon, gosh, it's like it would literally give people hope if you're in a similar situation with Bo and I were in. But anyways, that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So Bo and I got back together and, you know, we were thinking, we're each other's one, we're gonna be together forever. We got married and then planning on having a baby. We did a lot of prep actually because I said, look, I have PCOS. I want to make sure that my body is literally in like the best shape, the best mentally, physically, spiritually ever. So
I was going to say, I bet the diagnosis made you in a way, like in this weird kind of cyclical way, make you look after your body in the best way you possibly could, which you might have not done in the past, like you said, because of eating disorders, anxiety, being young, we don't care. But actually, when it comes down to it, because you knew you had these extra kind of pressures on your back, you probably went the extra mile to kind of make it happen.
Yeah, exactly. And I had healed my PCOS because I'd had a regular cycle for a long time, and I'd made a video. Yeah, I made a video on it on YouTube, actually. So I made that. And yeah, I felt like I was in a good path.
Main advice going off that you would give to somebody that's kind of just been diagnosed with PCOS and maybe wants to start making some positive changes?
See a naturopath. That'd be my number one recommendation. Don't go on the pill because that's most likely what the doctor is going to recommend you.
Yeah.
Hashtag not medical advice.
I know a doctor. Hashtag this is just what worked for me.
Yep. This is just worked for me. Just letting you know, disclaimer, this is what works for me.
Yeah.
Go see a naturopath. Go find a naturopath that you get along with really well, that you trust, because they are going to be your rock. Like, my naturopath helped me so much in preparation for getting pregnant, because I didn't want to just be like, oh yeah, let's go try and be pregnant tomorrow. Like, I didn't want to have that attitude. I wanted to be like, okay, I'm going to do all this prep work, and then when I know when we start trying, that if something does go wrong, if we don't conceive straight away, then we can go from there, because I know I've already ticked all the boxes. Like, I've done everything that I possibly can. So it must be my PCOS, or I can go and get help from my doctor.
Yeah.
It's not something that I could have done because I had done it. That's that preparation. So I took all the supplements. I did minimal exercise. Like, I reduced my stress as much as I could. In minimal exercise, I meant as in, like, I didn't do anything too crazy, like run 20 kilometers and like do high intensity stuff all the time. Yeah, exactly. And obviously from having experience with PCOS, that is not a good thing when you're trying to heal from PCOS.
Absolutely.
So
it's crazy the negative impact stress can have on your body. I know one of my friends is working 14-hour days on the regular, and her skin was like gray. She had permanent dark bags under her eyes, like, just like her digestion was all thrown off. And the moment she left that job and moved into something that was way more balanced, like, everything just started to click into place. And it's crazy because we look for like the perfect diet, the perfect workout routine, and actually if you focus on stress and sleep, like, a lot of your problems will be solved just from those alone.
Yeah, stress is a killer, literally the silent killer. Yeah, so I didn't want to talk about stress. So I didn't want to go into trying to conceive being stressful about trying to conceive, because it is a stressful thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's one thing that's not spoken about. I think there is so much pressure on, this is what a woman's born to do, you should just be able to do it. And actually, it doesn't work like that. Like, some people are very lucky and it just naturally happens. But for a lot of people, it's a process, and that is quite stressful.
It is stressful. And my heart goes out to so many people who are trying to conceive, because, oh, it would be awful to have to experience going through that.
Absolutely. And there's, I mean, we're very lucky in modern day society that there's so many options and ways to make the kind of magic happen for people. But yeah, it's just this like instant snap of the fingers. And like you said, the irony is, the more stressed you get about it, the harder it is to make it happen.
I didn't want to have that. So so we did even Bo prepped as well. Bo got some supplements as well from the naturopath, and she gave us some good tips and everything. And yeah, so we pretty much followed her advice. We ate really well, we limited alcohol, all that good stuff. And I mentally prepared myself. Like, I had to do a lot of therapy, pretty much. I went to my doctor, I got a mental health care plan, because I needed to, kind of work through my childhood trauma. And I didn't, and ancestral trauma as well. I didn't want to bring any of that into this pregnancy and pass it on to my child, just like I feel like I'd experienced with my family, my mother. So that was probably one of the biggest challenges that I went through. But we were so lucky.
You mentioned that as well, because I think a lot of people don't discuss that, about how cycles are repeated through generations. It's even crazy things. Like, for example, my nan was really scared of heights. So is my mom, so am I. But it's kind of like a less filtered version down. So like, I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie, but I still have the fear. So I will be really scared just before I do it, but I can make myself do it. Whereas my mom, she's in like a really high building, she gets really nervous. And it's crazy how much actually does get passed on through the generations. So it's interesting that you say that about the importance of kind of working on you and your identity before you bring in.
Yeah, we're just thinking about your grandma, when she was pregnant with your mum, you were already inside her as well.
Well, that's interesting. Explain more.
Because when you're pregnant, you have a girl, your child has all her, like, your baby girl has all her eggs in utero.
Oh, wow. I have no idea what the scientific terms are. I would totally buy it. You could say,
I've had him up a Chris, but I would believe you. I've had a wine, guys, and I am a nurse. I'm embarrassed. I don't know the word. Anyways, long story short, when your mummy was inside your grandma's womb, so were you. You were inside your mummy. Like, she had all her eggs already. So technically, Polly was already inside my mum when she was pregnant with me, because, girls are born with all of their eggs. So Polly has all her eggs already. So I already carried my... So isn't it crazy?
That's madness.
It's madness, incredible. So incredible. So that, it's literally in our DNA, like what we experience through our lives, our pregnancies, it's passed through DNA, like literally it's imprinted within us and it's passed on. So I feel like it is really important to kind of work through that trauma and that pain, and that it's kind of like reparenting yourself and relearning and healing. And healing isn't linear. it's not going to happen overnight, and it's not going to happen the instant you have the baby, Yeah. It's going to take time. And I'm still learning and I'm still growing and still kind of working through all of this. But yeah.
I think it's so interesting that you talk about, you use the word reparenting. And I think it's so interesting that a lot of people don't even take that time to look after themselves or give themselves that permission to look after themselves until they either are a parent or are deciding to become one, because then they become aware of actually how important taking care of yourself is, as well as taking care of others.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And when you become a parent, you become a martyr. You kind of forget about yourself and put everyone else before you. And it's just not the way. Like, you have to show your child that putting yourself last is not the way to go. Like, you have to show your child, you have to model it for them. You have to show them that, yes, you can put yourself before other people. Because it's like at the when you're in the airplane, like they always say, put your own oxygen mask on before you help someone else. Like, I want to teach Polly that I don't want her to seeing me suffer and put everyone else before me, because she's going to grow up and think that, okay, I have to do that. I have to sacrifice my own health and happiness to make sure everyone else is happy around me. It's like, no, I can put myself first as well. And I want her to grow up thinking that, because my whole life, I never put myself first. It was always everybody else. And
do you think that perspective changed, like, during your pregnancy, that you realized you needed to prioritize you and your needs? Because I know that you've got quite an interesting birthing story in the kind of timeline and everything that went on. And do you think it was during that kind of process that you realized, actually, I need to let go of mantras and manners, I need to let go of peas and everyone else, and actually go, okay, what's my body care doing? What do I need?
Yeah, definitely. And I think because it was during lockdowns last year when everything was really happening, and I kind of took the time to be alone and reflect, and just, I don't know, I felt like Polly talked to me a lot. Like, even though I didn't know who she was or whether she was a boy or a girl, even though deep down I knew she was a girl, I just didn't want to admit it to myself in case she came out a boy, but I knew I was a girl. And I just felt this urge to just surrender, I guess, and just let go. I had such high expectations for myself all the time, and the pressure built up over time. Like, when I first started Instagram and social media and YouTube, whatever, I used to post whatever I wanted. I didn't care what people thought about me. And the older I got, the more involved I got into it, the more I started to care, the more perfectionist I became, the more worried about what other people would think of me. I became so worried and so caught up in worrying about what other people would think about me that I forgot my whole purpose of why I was on there sharing my journey anyway. And that turned into even more anxiety being on social media, because I didn't want to post anything. I didn't want to share anything because it wasn't going to be perfect.
Yeah. And then the problem is nothing ever will be perfect, because that idea of perfection is unattainable. You never can achieve it. And I think definitely motherhood, perfection doesn't exist. You just have to wing it.
Oh my goodness. Yes. You have to wing it, like, every single day. So that kind of...
One thing I was going to ask you is, obviously pregnancy is hard enough as it is, but how was that process during lockdown?
So after we prepped our bodies for a long time, we thought, let's try. It was a full moon. So we made love and it was beautiful. Of course it was.
So much so.
Yes, of course it was a full moon. Do you expect anything else from me?
No, it all just lines up for you. I love it.
Yeah. And I just knew, like, literally later that week, I was like, something feels different. And it was in my nipples. That was super weird and sensitive. And I was like, okay, surely I'm pregnant, but I don't think I am. I won't stress about it. Yeah. We went away on a little holiday, and I love red wine, as we spoke about before the podcast starts. I literally love it. So I had a couple camping and I just didn't like it. I'm on a holiday. I was like, I can't drink. Like, I can't believe I can't drink red wine. And then a couple of days later, I did a pregnancy test and I was pregnant, and Bo and I just could not believe it. We were just so happy and in shock as well, because Bo was always like, you're not pregnant, you always think you're pregnant. Like, my period's like one day late, I'm like, I'm pregnant.
I think it's ingrained, when you're younger it's the fear of being pregnant. It's, and then when you get older it's like, oh my gosh, am I
ready? Literally. And then, I went through my pregnancy fine. Like, I just had a few issues in the beginning, like really nauseous, and I had really bad bronchitis for like a month. I couldn't breathe and I had a chest infection. But otherwise, everything was fine. I can't really complain about my pregnancy. I had a bit of pelvic pain, but, just the usual. And then COVID hit, and you know, everyone was kind of in the same boat, like, what the fuck was happening? Like, yeah. It's like, what's happening? It was crazy. And then my GP, my doctor that I was doing my pregnancy care with, died by suicide. So that was
so hard, because obviously I've not gone through pregnancy myself. My best friend's a midwife, and I know that there's multiple ways that you can kind of, I don't know if it's slightly different in Australia, but obviously you've got different ways you can go through the pregnancy process, and you want like a doula or a midwife, or you have a consistent GP, or you can kind of, it's chopping and changing. So I presume that you had consistently from start to finish the same person, kind of support network.
That's right. Yeah, I had my GP, and she's the one that helped me through all of my anxiety and that therapy that I worked through prior to conceiving, because I did tell her about my history with my mom and all that kind of stuff. And she's like, yep, let's get you healed. Let's get you working through that stuff before you conceive, because, you know, I want to be there for you and I want you to be in the best headspace. And so that was really hard.
As somebody say, from a very scientific perspective, that she had a much more like naturopathic view, which would definitely be important to people like me and you, who, like, you know, that is very important to us.
Yeah. So I think what makes a really good GP is someone that can actually resonate with you, because at the end of the day, the GP is working for you. You're not working for them. Yeah. And she resonated with me. Like, she took the time to be like, okay, Mary's really holistic. She's into like holistic health. She's more alternative. I know she's a nurse, but she's on both sides. Like, she likes Western medicine, but she's also on the alternative side. And when I had to go on an anti-anxiety medication, she actually found one that had like natural components that was made from St. John's wort. So she actually took the time to be like, this is the one I want you to be on, because this is will suit you more in terms of your ethos and your ethics and things like that. So she was amazing. I just loved her, adored her so much. And, you know, I worked with her as well at the, you know, we will call it.
She was like your big companion through the process.
Yeah.
Especially during COVID,
she was like a motherly figure to me as well, even though she had three, you know, teenage children. And I don't know, it was hard. It's hard to explain. She was like, yeah, fun auntie. And I can't explain it. She was just beautiful. And that was really horrible. And I've worked a lot through it. You know, if I would have told you this story 3 months ago, I'd be, you know, an absolute mess. But I've learned how to talk about it a bit better and process it.
Hard as well, because you would have been in such an emotionally vulnerable place during your pregnancy to have to go through a trauma like that is really hard.
It's so hard. The hormones, you cannot control it. And being pregnant, like, you have to have stability. You have to have a constant. You have to have the trust. And I had a doula, which was amazing. I had her consistently throughout the whole pregnancy. She couldn't give me any medical advice. She couldn't tell me what to do. And then I had to go to the pregnancy care clinic at the hospital. So I had a different doctor every single week. And I ended up being a semi-high-risk pregnancy, because they were worried Polly was too small, that she wasn't growing, and that they were going to induce me, because they thought that if I was going longer, all these things. And I just had no trust in anyone. I didn't trust anything they were saying. I was like, it was literally going to one ear and out the other, because I was like, you know when you just don't care what anyone else says because you actually don't trust them? I kind of felt that, like, I just, because I had, you know, when you're grieving, I was grieving as well, because you have that anger. And I know that I feel awful saying this, but it's part of the grieving process, that, like, I kept thinking, like, how dare she leave me alone? How dare she leave me to do this on my own and not help me with my baby? But it's like, that sounds so selfish, because, you know, she had three children. And I just feel like, how can I be so upset? Yeah, it didn't feel fair. Didn't feel fair. But that's grief.
Grief doesn't make sense. It's a really complicated process. It's because although you're sad, to process that sadness, that anger comes in because it's frustration that can't, like, manifest itself. And so you would be angry feeling left, because pregnancy is such a complicated time anyway. And there's, even though you have, like, I presume that you probably had a birth plan in mind, and I can imagine that it probably wasn't what you had in mind at all in the end. And, you know, those that can, like you said, that consistency is so important. So I'm not surprised that you felt angry and frustrated. And I definitely have that deep-rooted distrust of the medical system, just because of my own personal journey through it, from eating disorders and mental health. So I can totally relate with where you're coming from in that perspective.
Yeah.
How was the latter half of the pregnancy, obviously after you had to change doctors,
so it was like you said, it was frustrating. It was just like, you know, and being a nurse, they knew I was a nurse. I kind of felt like I was still spoken to in ways that was like, I don't know. I can't, it's so hard to explain. But
because I guess in a way, because you are trained in the medical field, you know, like obviously the training is different, but you know more than like, you know,
yeah.
I would. I'd go in there complete blank slate, no idea. I'd have to read books, but you already have that level of understanding and intelligence. So I guess it's really frustrating for you if somebody then speaks to you as if you don't land.
Yeah. And it's not only that, they were like not telling me things. It's like, hey, I'm right here. I understand what you're saying. Can you just tell me, say it how it is? Yeah. Like, say it to me straight. I'd rather you be honest with me than say it in a way that you think I don't understand, but I do understand because I'm a nurse. Hello, I'm right here. Like, I literally know what you're saying.
Literally.
And I guess it was my own, how can I say this? What's that saying where it was like being a nurse and knowing too much was my strength and my own weakness. Like, it was because I knew too much. I can't. Yes, exactly. That's double-edged sword. It's like I kind of knew too much, but I knew too much so that I didn't surrender. Like I tried to be too much in control. I lacked trust. I didn't want anyone to tell me what to do, but I also wanted someone to tell me what to do. It's kind of like this whole, looking back now, it's just like crazy. I just can't believe what was going through my head. Like, I was just so lost. And I thought I'd done all the prep. I thought I did a hypnobirthing course. I listened to hypno tracks every single night. The whole entire birth, I was the calmest person you would ever see in your whole entire life. When I was going through the worst surges of contractions, I didn't even make a sound. I was like, how? But maybe that was to my own like demise. Like, maybe I should have been more vocal. Maybe I should have let go a bit more. I was trying to be too much in control because of that fear and that distrust that I had in everyone, that I had to control this because I don't trust anyone else if something goes wrong.
Yeah. Because the control had been completely taken away. So then by nature, your brain's then like, well, what can I control?
And you know what that's like coming from a history of eating disorders. Like, I come from a history of eating disorders. Like, that's control is everything to someone who has no stability and no trust.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, without control, it's almost like your foundations have been removed and you're just balancing on like a wobbly board. And is how I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like taking the surfboard from the ground to the sea. Like, that's what
losing control feels like.
And that's kind of what I felt like, I guess, during my birth. And I look, and this just, I mean, it's almost a year and a half later, and I've had so much time to look back and reflect on it and just work through the processes. But yeah, and I ended up going into labor on the full moon. Can you believe it?
Of course I did. And oh my goodness.
I know. That. That's why Polly's middle name is Luna for the moon. Because she's a
moon. I was going to ask you if that was why. I love that.
Yeah. And she's my little moon. Yeah. So I went into labor on the full moon. And I remember that day, or the day prior, actually, I had gone to the hospital for monitoring because I'd been having weekly monitoring to check on the baby and everything. And I was on the phone to my doula having a big rant about how they were trying to induce me and how I'm like, I know what's right. Like, my baby's fine. Mm-hmm. She's fine. She's just small. I'm a small person. Bo's not a huge person. Like, I'm fine. And then, bam, went into labor. I had my first like contraction, and then kind of went into the night, easing into it. And I remember Bo got home from work. He didn't get home from work till about 9:30 that night, and I went into labor at 4 p.m. that afternoon. So I'd be like, Bo came home and I'm like, I've had a hot shower, I've had hot curry, now I have to have hot sex. And
it's like that episode in Friends when, I don't know if you watch Friends, when Rachel's trying to get the baby to come.
Yes. Yes, that's literally it. And we just finished watching Friends, so I might have got it from there. But yeah, so we had sex, and then literally as soon as I went to the toilet, my mucus plug came out, and I was in full blown labor from then on. Like, my contractions were, like 10 minutes apart, and then they got closer and closer. So I labored overnight by myself, and I told Bo to go into the front room so I could do it on my own because I didn't want him to be tired. And you know, pre-labor can take a very long time. And so the morning came and Bo jumped into bed and he goes, you know, have you been timing your contractions? I'm like, I haven't actually. You should probably start doing that. And it's like, yeah. And then we timed it. They were like already 5-6 minutes apart, which was pretty good. And I had never noticed it because I'd just been in such a trance and I'd been dozing on and off and just trying to stay in the present moment and ride through everything. And then my doula and best friend came over and bought some supplies. And then, like, we did the massaging and the oils and the bouncy ball and affirmations and praying and all that kind of stuff. We did all the good stuff at home and felt like I wanted to cry so much. Like, I just remember we were in our bedroom here and I just wanted to cry and I just didn't let myself cry. I was like, no, you're not crying. You're about to have a baby. You're not allowed to cry. Like, I just remember having all this control over, like, not allowed to have emotions. And so we decided that
was because, again, like we said before, you were trying to create some kind of strength and consistency and stability when everything kind of felt a bit chaotic. Because I know when I'm in mine, it's an extreme heightened emotion. For example, it's not the same at all, but my boyfriend recently broke up with me over the phone and it was completely out of the blue. It was horrible. And my instinct is to, like, I can feel the emotion, like, well up. But my instinct is just to suppress and I just shut down because I'm like, no, you're not, I'm controlling this. You're not having that. You're not having that power over me to know that I'm hurting. Like, I'm not allowing you to. And it's crazy, isn't it? How, like, the need to feel like you've got this sometimes.
Yeah.
And probably not the best thing because then that those tears will need to come out eventually.
First of all, I want to say, I'm so sorry. And second, what a jerk for breaking up with you over the phone. What is this? 2000, Leah 2000. Oh my God.
He's a doctor as well.
The irony. Oh, the irony. Oh, goodness. Well.
Yeah, we moved. It was like 2 months ago now. So, if you know, hot girl summer is a thing. I'm living my best life.
Good on you.
It still hurts. My heart still hurts. But, you know, I'm a big believer that the universe brings people into our lives for a reason. And he was clearly just meant to come in to teach me something and I need to do more stuff.
Whatever
the right person comes in, that's my, my perspective. But yeah, there we go. Maybe he'll listen to this. I hope you feel shit about yourself. He's dope.
Yes. My goodness. Just can't believe people are still breaking up with people over the phone.
Oh, honestly, grow up. Say it to my
grow
face.
Up.
Yeah, I did actually make him meet me in person and say it to my face because I was like, I'd rather hurt twice and you have to see what you are doing and understand and actually have to deal with your behaviours and know they're not okay than to just
get on you.
Like, nothing's wrong. Like, I'm not having that. I respect myself more to know that I deserve for you. In a way, like, I deserve to know that you're hurting too. Like, it wasn't just a one-sided easy get out.
Yeah. Good on you. So proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So wine where were helps. We? Yeah, our wine definitely helps. It definitely helps. That, yeah, like you were saying, it was like the control in me. I knew I wasn't going to be giving birth at home. What about a home birth at one point? But I was like, no way. Like, I am too much of a control freak.
Yeah.
I think worst case scenario, that's just who I am. That's my personality. It's type A. I've always been like that. And I hated if something was to go wrong and I would just ever blame myself. Went to the hospital and I love people who do have home birth. And this is no way against people that have home births. I think it's amazing. But honestly, I just feel like you do what feels good for you. Like, it's your baby, your birth.
It's so personal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So personal.
Everyone's
different. No, if in an ideal world, I'd love to have a home birth and whatnot. But yeah, that's just not my story. So we got to the hospital, we set up the room and we got the fairy lights and the salt lamps and we hung up my affirmation cards and I bought a pillow from home. I was in my dressing gown, like everything was cozy, everything was great. And the midwife for the afternoon came on. I actually had two midwives. I had a student midwife and midwife, and they're like, oh, let's check to see how far dilated you are. And I didn't really want to get that many checks. I had it in my head that I was like, nope, I'm not having any checks. Like, I was super, I don't know. I had all these things that I was like, what was I thinking? It's never going to happen. I like to be told things. I like to know what's happening. Like, literally, details are my thing. You know, when you, I don't know if this is you, but I like to know every single word that has been said in a conversation. I like to know, you know, what, like, I just like details. I'm like, give me all the things.
It's why I do this podcast. I literally get to find out juicy gossip every day.
I know, I didn't want to say it, but yeah, I love gossip. But
fun. It's a way of life.
It's a way of life. But in like a good way. Like, I like to know details. Yeah, if Beau goes out with his friends, I'm like, what'd you talk about? Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Like, and I feel like it's It's human design. It's human nature to want to know about each other, to learn from each other, and to like, that's how culture evolved, and that's how like stories get passed on, and yeah, so many cool things. That's, yeah. So she checked me and I was 4 centimeters and I was like, oh yeah, this is good. This is good. She's like, yeah, this is really good. You know, I've been going on for about 24 hours at this point.
Oh, wow.
So labor for 24 hardcore hours. Yeah, hardcore. 24 hours, 4 centimeters. I was like, okay, a bit slow. But she's like, you know what? It's your first baby. Takes a bit longer sometimes. Like, yeah. Just keep, you know, keep doing you. Stay active. And I was walking around. Unfortunately, I couldn't have a birth pool or anything like that because it was banned in the hospital because of COVID. But just walked around and I had Bo like doing pressure points and massaging, things like that. But I didn't have any pain relief. And I remember it was like 6 p.m. and a doctor came in. And the whole time I was in there, they had to have a monitor on me, on my belly, to check Polly's heart rate and my contractions because I was classified not high risk, but they were worried about the baby.
Yeah.
They wanted to make sure that her heart was going to be okay and everything, her heart rate was fine. And yeah, so because I'm so tiny, like my belly was huge and it was so round. Like it was the most round circle you'd ever seen. It was like a basketball, literally. And they couldn't hold the monitor on, like they couldn't sit the monitor flush against my belly.
Yes.
So they had to follow me around everywhere with this monitor. So it was kind of like I was walking around moving and swaying and like breathing through these contractions, and this woman is just underneath me holding this monitor. I'm just looking down at her. I'm just like, what? Like in no way was it relaxing. I'm just like, I care about what you're thinking of me right now. Like, what are you doing? Like, I just want to be left alone, but obviously I couldn't. But at the same time, I was like, I want all your help. I need to surrender. I want you to be there for me. Because I've been, my whole life, I've done everything myself. I was, from a young age, I've been super independent, like more independent than your average child. Was adamant, I had made it myself, believed that I had to do this by myself, that just a bonus that I had Bo there, but I had to do this by myself. Like I wasn't allowed to have any help. I wasn't allowed to have any pain relief. I had to do it naturally. This is what I had to do. And there was no way of going around it.
I don't know if you're, I feel like we're very similar in that sense, in that I really struggle to let people in. In times, obviously I've not had a baby, but in times of like real struggle or stress when actually you need to lean on people, you really struggle because when you have to be tough and strong and be in that kind of fight mode for so long, you really struggle to kind of get out of that fight or flight. And then, like you said, surrender and just let go, which is interesting because we both do yoga, which is all about that. But yeah, in our day-to-day lives, we're probably like the worst people for it.
Yes. Yoga teachers are all the ones that are all the crazy people because,
yeah, we're all nutters.
You know, we're all nutters because it keeps us sane. We're so similar. So similar. Literally, are we the same person?
I think so.
You nailed it. You nailed it. Like, I always struggle to let people in, even now, like, it's just something in me. I just can't. I have to do it my own.
It's like part of your identity because if you had to do it from such a young age, you've trained yourself to have to just do it on your own, be that fight, be strong, be a soldier on your own. And then when somebody turns up and's like a cheerleader behind you, you're like, what the way? Why are you like, leave me be, I'm fine. When actually in these kind of situations, I think the world reminds us actually you need to lean on people, you need to let people in.
And of course, giving birth, you're literally the most vulnerable you will ever be in your entire life. Yeah. And looking back now, I just wish, I wish I asked for help. I wish I just said, you take control. I wish, but you know, I can't. I can only go and take that experience with me into the next birth. But anyways, at 6 p.m., the doctor comes in, it's around this time, and he said, we want to break your waters. I was naked on the bed, vomiting my guts up. I'd just been vomiting for the last half an hour. And he's like, we can't get a good trace of the baby. And the midwife was like, it's because she's been vomiting. You know, we think she's close. Because when you're in transition, so the transition means that you're the stage of labor that you're just about to be 10 centimeters. And it's the part that you kind of see in the movies where it's like, you did this to me. I can't do this anymore. And the mother like wants to walk and escape. And like that's transition, that's like the hardest part. You're just about to reach that 10 centimeters. And we all thought I was there. Yeah, I had minute-long contractions, no break. I was vomiting. I was like, yep, this is it. I couldn't do it. I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. The midwife said, we don't have to break your waters. We'll just see how you go. I was like, okay. Anyways, 2 hours later, still nothing happening. I said, let's check me again. And we checked me and I get on the bed on my back. And I'm, at this point, I'm exhausted. Like, I'm so exhausted. Yeah. I can't even, I'd been standing up for so long because lying down would hurt too much. Yeah. I tried every position on the sun. Like, all I wanted to do was hang from ropes on the wall off the ceiling, but they didn't have any. Like, so I was hanging off Bo because that was the only thing that was helping me. Oh, and so she checked me and I was like, okay, yeah, she's going to check me and I'm going to be 9 centimeters. Like, I know it. I'm so close. I'm so close. Just that last centimeter I've got to get to. She looked up at me and I just knew straight away. I was like, oh, so I just burst into tears. I was still only 4 centimeters. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I was, that's when I cried. I was like, what the hell? And I was just defeated because I felt like I'd been working so hard. And as you know, as someone being a high achiever and getting things done, I'd been doing all this work. Why was I not getting the work done? Why was there nothing to show for it? I was like, I should have a baby by now. And like that type of mindset I had, I was like, oh, and this is crazy because I thought I'd done all the work. And it just goes to show that, yeah, healing is not linear. Like, it's not going to show up in times that you think that you are healed. It's going to show up in different parts of your life. Like, I feel like it's showing up now in motherhood. But anyways, we decided to break my waters and put a clip on the baby's head where they just insert it, like just clip it on the baby's head so that I was able to walk around. So they didn't have to have the monitor on my belly anymore. So she didn't have to follow me around. Yeah. So I was like, okay, let's do that. I was on the bed for an hour on my back because the midwife couldn't get it. Like, I was in agony at this point. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. I was looking down at my body. It was like The Exorcist. I was just on the bed. I was like, couldn't control myself. Yeah. It was so fucked up. Like, I cannot even explain to you how I felt with my legs open in this hospital with this light shining on me. Like, it was just fucked up. Like, I was like, this is not happening right now. I was in so much pain. My waters had been broken.
No pain relief at this point.
No pain relief at this point. And when my waters broke, when your waters break, it goes from like 0 to 100. It's like your contractions generally ramp up. So I'd been, so they just got so intense. And they finally got a doctor in and God answered my prayers. In walks doctor that I just absolutely adored. I'd met him once in my pregnancy care clinic and I just resonated and clicked with him so much. He was just like this giant teddy bear and he's like, hi. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're here. Thank you. I want to cry.
I'm so invested in this story. But the relief I just felt when you said that, I was like, oh my goodness.
You have no idea. It's just like, it was literally a sign from God. It was like, yes, you're here to deliver my baby. Yeah. All is okay. Like, thank you. And so he walked in. I'm on the bed, clip on the head straight away. He said, stand up, get up. I was like, oh, thank the Lord. Like, I was like, oh, thank goodness. Like, I could stand up and this relief was like, and then this whole time our doula was actually on the screen on the iPad. We had her on, I think, Zoom or Skype or something. And she was, with us the whole time. So we were all just like, she was all encouraging me. The doctor was encouraging me. Bo was great the whole time. I'm like, okay, you can do this. Let's get you to 10 centimeters. You can walk around now. You can go to the shower now. Like, let's go to the shower. I get into the shower. And by this point, I'm like, the hypnobirthing is almost out the window. To the point where I cannot control my breathing anymore. I start to kind of panic and I get in the shower and I'm like, I think I need an epidural, Bo. I think I need an epidural. It's like, no. I can hear my doula. I can hear the midwife. Like, no, you're doing so well. Like, I'm like, I can't do it. They're like, you're doing it though. And I'm like, I can't do it. And I remember looking at Bo, holding onto his arm. It's like this look that you have with your partner, with your person. It's like, you just know. It's like, this is the one thing I need from you. And I said to him prior to labor, I said, if I ask for an epidural, don't give me one unless you actually think I need one.
Yeah.
And he knew in that moment, like, you need one. I was like, I can't. I was like, Bo, you need to do this for me. Like, you need to do this for me. You need to be my advocate. You need to tell them that I need this epidural. Like, I can't do it. And at that point, when he said, yeah, okay, we'll get it, I was just like, thank God. I felt this sense of relief. I felt heard. I felt so seen. I was like, okay, maybe this is going to be okay. It's okay that I asked for pain relief now. It's okay. Maybe this is, of course that guilt kind of came in. I had that guilt like, oh, how dare you get an epidural? But I was like, no, I need this for my own sanity, for me to be able to keep going. So usually the anaesthetist takes like 3 hours to come sometimes, you know, honestly, depending on how busy the hospital is. Yeah. But literally, he was there within 10 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
I got on the bed.
Yeah.
Meant to happen. I got on the bed. I didn't feel a thing. He's like, you're going to feel a scratch of the anesthetic going in first. Didn't even feel it. I was like, are you serious? Then he said he's going to put the epidural in. He put it in straight away. And then the midwife even said that that's one of the best epidurals I've ever seen. I was like, oh my goodness, because I was still as fuck. Like, I did not move because I was like, I'm getting the epidural and it's not going to get fucked up. Like, I'm literally going to stay so still.
So still.
And I remember like, Deb sitting there, I'm like, I'm having an attraction. He's like, okay. And I remember just like, I mustered up all strength just to be so still because I knew I needed this so much. And so they put me into the bed and I was finally able to relax. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, oh, I keep saying, oh my goodness, because I just keep living back to that moment, just thinking the relief of not feeling pain, of not feeling my legs, because I literally couldn't feel my legs because they were so dead. They were so, it's like I'd run a marathon because I've been standing up literally for like 24 hours. Like, I'd been standing up. I got the epidural at the 30-hour mark. Anyways, we are just chilling and I'm getting some rest and they're like, okay, we're going to hook you up to the Pitocin drip, which is the oxytocin drip where it helps increase your contractions, like makes them stronger. But like, okay, this will help you open up. And if you relax and try and get some rest and think good things and keep your breathing going, like, you know, you'll be able to open up. And I was like, yep. And the midwife put me on like, my legs on this peanut ball to help open my pelvis and to help the baby kind of get into a good position. And I felt really positive. I was like, okay, yeah, then my next check is at 12 because you're allowed to get checked every 4 hours. My next check is at 12. And I'm going to be 10 centimeters and I'm going to push my baby out and I'm going to have a baby by 1 o'clock. Like, literally, this is what I was praying for. I was like, yeah, this is it. Anyways, the doctor comes in at 12 and he said, look, your contractions aren't very strong. We have to put the drip up a bit more, make it a bit stronger. But yeah, you keep doing you. And I'm like, okay, can I get a check? Mm-hmm. He goes, okay, we'll give you a check. Gave me a check. I was still 4 centimeters.
No.
I hadn't dilated at all. I had not dilated at all, not even a smidge. And he said, your cervix is really edematous. It's really swollen.
Yeah.
It's not looking good. And I was like, okay, what does this mean? He goes, we think maybe the baby might be stuck, but we don't know. We'll try different positions and see if anything else works. Because a baby might be in like a different position, like its head, its body, like it might just take a little bit of maneuvering to get it. Yeah. Anyways, it was about 2 a.m. in the morning, and they've been coming in and out, I've been trying to rest, checking my drip, checking my epidural, checking all these things. And I the whole time on the monitor, I could hear the baby's heartbeat, just doot, 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 doot. I just hear it, and I could hear just doot, 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 doot. I was like, what? Did the baby's heart just stop? And then it happened again. Doot, 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 doot. I was, okay. So terrifying because I hadn't heard that. I'd always heard that. Everyone had heard consistency. And at that moment, I just knew something wasn't right. Something was not right. And I pressed the buzzer. And before I even knew it, like the midwife was in, the doctor was in. And they're like, look, the baby is distressed. The baby's heart's stopping. Like, we need to get this baby out now. And it's looking like we have to have an emergency cesarean. I could hear her. I could hear Polly, the baby, and she said to me, he's like, mommy, I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. Like, she literally spoke to me. I don't know whether it was my mind, whether it was really her. It was, but I feel like it was really her. And she told me, it was like this connection that we had, this innate connection. It's like, okay, she's had enough. She literally needs my help now to get her out. And we're going to need it. She's going to need me to let go of any expectations, any plan that I had, and just surrender to this moment that this was the way that she was going to come into the world. And I could never forgive myself if I let my ego get into the way of her being here safely because I wanted a natural birth or what didn't want a C-section or what didn't want epidural. Like, who gives a fuck? At the end of the day, I had a really shitty, traumatic kind of experience, the whole kind of pregnancy, the birth, my past. But at the end of the day, I do want a safe baby. That's ultimate goal here is to have a safe, healthy baby in my arms. All that matters.
Human.
They wheeled me off to emergency to the theatre room, sorry, for the emergency C-section. And it was actually quite beautiful. I wasn't really as scared as I thought I would be. And I remember they were playing a playlist in the theatre, and the surgeon was there, like the doctor that came in and that I really loved and like adored. Yes. He was there doing the surgery, pulling Polly out, and the anaesthetists were amazing. They were like up in my head, like putting lip gloss on me and like putting water drops in my mouth. Cause I was like, I've got a really dry mouth. They're like, you don't want to have any water, but I can give you a drop. And I was like, okay. And Bo was there holding my hand. They were just talking me all through it. And they were like, you know, you're going to have a healthy, safe baby soon. This is all meant to be. This is just the way she was supposed to come in. And I was like, whoa. Anyways, they're like, okay, she's about to come out. You're going to feel some pressure and some pulling. And I'm like, what? That was the weirdest feeling I've ever felt in my life.
It must have felt so bizarre.
Yes, yeah, so bizarre, because I'm like, they're literally cutting seven layers of my body right now, and I can't feel a thing, but I can feel them pull it. It kind of felt special because I could feel them pulling out my babies. So I kind of feel like I had that kind of connection, that I could still feel that part. Like I could still feel her leaving my body. Yeah. Even if it wasn't the way that I'd imagined. Yeah. So they got her out and they said, Bo, you can do the call. And Bo's like, I can't see. And then like, he's like, oh, it's a girl. I'm like, oh, she's a girl.
Oh, the relief you must have felt that whole process.
Oh, and she was the most perfect baby in the whole entire world. And I just was instantly in love and in shock and in awe and in complete confusion. Like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah, that was it. And then they stitched me up and they took her away. Like, she got to be with me for a little bit and latch onto my breast. And that was really lovely. And then Bo and her went off to the recovery room while I was getting stitched up. And I remember just laying there thinking, like, I could die right now. Or what the hell just happened? Like, I was thinking the most irrational thoughts. Like, literally, you're lying there in a theater room all by yourself with the surgeon stitching you up, talking medical jargon, and you're just thinking, like, what just happened? And I reflected, like, 36 hours. I felt every single emotion under the sun just to end up here. And of course, what if goes through your head 100 times? I guess this was my birth story, and that was the way it was supposed to happen. And I
transformative process. Like, I bet now, like, no matter how, because I think nature of like mental health and just life and being a mother, it, you know, you get days where everything is just too much. I think now you can probably have this, like, and although at the time it was so chaotic and traumatic and so much going on, now you can look back at that whole process and go, wow, like, I did that. Like, I made that happen. Like, so do you know what? Like, having 4 hours sleep and having to look after a little human and manage life and work and cooking and everything else, I can do that because I did that.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, holy crap. I can't believe that, that I did it, that we got there in the end. Yeah, insane.
Your relationship with yourself completely changed after you gave birth because of what your body proved it was able to do. And then also having to, like you said, release control.
And know that
I think it goes back to the fact that, my body didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right? Someone always having control over her body and her body being so capable of doing so many things of, you know, when I had an eating disorder, I was able to lose lots of weight, or binge eating disorder, I was able to gain lots of weight, or I can do the split, I can do a handstand. Yeah. My body was always doing what I wanted it to do because I had control over my body. But then this one thing that we are in, I guess we're supposed to do it as a woman. My body didn't do it. My body didn't do the one thing that I was supposed to do as a woman, as a mother, was to give birth to my baby. That was hard for me to deal with because I felt so much guilt for months after because, you know, they found out that she was posterior. So she was stuck. She was the wrong way. And her head was also like brow presentation. So she was kind of like, she had her chin up. So yeah, she was trying to come chin first. Something like that. Something like brow first, not head first, brow first. Like she was trying to like, she was like diving the wrong way. Yeah, and she was backwards. So I found out that she was stuck. So it wasn't my fault. It's just one of those things that happen. You know, I'm so grateful for Western medicine and for modern medicine that, you know, if I hadn't had ability to have a C-section, we'd both be dead. It's madness. Like, I'm so thankful for that. But yeah, I guess it was really hard for me to come to terms with the fact that I had a C-section because I couldn't hold my baby properly. I couldn't do like the proper skin on skin that I wanted to do. I couldn't bend and twist. And I don't know, I just felt like it wasn't I just felt guilty because, yeah, like I said, my body could always do everything I wanted to do. But the one time that I felt like it was the most natural thing for me to hold my baby in this certain way, I couldn't do it because my body was scarred.
You had to completely let go of this idea of what
yep.
it had to be. I mean, instead had to just trust that the way it happened was the way it was meant to be.
And it was, I can't beat myself up over it anymore. And I know that doesn't define me. And I guess learning and growing over the last few years is that your experiences, yeah, they shape you, but they don't define you. Exactly. Like I'm not defined by this experience. I'm not the mother that had the C-section.
No.
I experienced the C-section, but I am not the mum that had a C-section. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. It's like the same as you shouldn't be defined, you know, by like any form of classification of whether you're like, you know, you shouldn't be defined by your age, you shouldn't be defined by your hair color, your job, or anything like that. It doesn't matter. Like, I've interviewed a guest a while ago about how like divorce is often quite defining. People feel like they have to admit it, like it's some kind of absolutely awful personality trait. And actually, it's not. It's just like the way the world works. You don't have any control over that. What happens in the moment happens. And actually, what matters, like you said, is this beautiful baby girl that you've brought into the world and how you raise her, not how you brought her in. Like, doesn't matter. She's here. She was coming. It's about what you do now she's here.
Exactly. It's how I raised her. You're 100% right. And it's how I love her and all that good stuff. So
I'm so amazed by you because I think you just have such, you're so honest with what you share, but also this, it makes me laugh like moments in between when even though you're going through this like horrific process at the time that you're in so much pain and everything's going on, all you were caring about was like, is your hubby okay? Is your baby okay? Is that you're worried about everyone else and you're the one that's going through the chaos?
That pretty much it. That's the people pleaser in me. I was kind of like thinking to my husband, I even said to my husband before we went into the C-section, I was like, have you had something to eat? Make sure you have something to eat. Like, have you had a drink? Oh, when I got the epidural and you know, I hadn't slept for 30 hours and you know, he had a good night's sleep. I was like, make sure you sleep, honey. Like, have a good sleep, babe. You sleep. I'm fine. Like, I'm, oh.
He's probably, like, honestly, I'll be all right. Like,
yes, literally. He's like, shut up. He always accuses like, you need to set some boundaries. I need to work on my boundaries and I need to stop being a people pleaser. But I am, motherhood is definitely teaching me to set those boundaries and not be a people pleaser because I don't see people out there. Yeah, I don't have time. I really don't have time to be a people pleaser because it's so exhausting because I just say yes to everything and I can't.
Yeah, it's not possible. It's not humanly. I'm exactly the same. It's something I'm having to learn like slowly but surely that actually there is power in saying no. You don't have to do every single thing all the time. It's okay. Like, people aren't going to hate you. You're not going to miss out because you decided to say no.
Yeah. It's JOMO, the joy of missing out. It's just as beautiful as FOMO. Like,
I love that, JOMO. I've not heard of that before. I'm going to start using that.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. I actually wrote a quote the other day. It was about how, like, so we talk about, like, gratitude. And I feel like sometimes we're so self-aware. Sometimes we're too self-aware. And actually, I think the greatest form of gratitude is taking care of yourself. Because 100%. If you don't take care of this vessel that you like here and you're existing in that enables you to have all of these things, these connections, these people, these experiences that you're grateful for, then that gratitude doesn't kind of transcend. Does that make sense? You have to
be
for you and the self-care and looking after you in order for the rest of it to fall into place.
Yeah. And I feel like that self-care equals self-love. Like you said, it comes back around. Like, how can you expect to love yourself when you don't take care of yourself?
And 100%.
You need to show gratitude to yourself. Yeah.
100%. I'm so for it. It's definitely something I'm now having to learn in a slightly different way to you, but still. I thought I'd be a mother to myself before I can be a mother to a little human I bring into the world later down the line.
And regardless, like, whether you're a mother or not, anyone can relate to birth stories, I feel like, because it's a journey. I listen to so many birth stories before I was even pregnant because I would just found them so fascinating because I was like, wow, like, it's a complete transformation.
How did you kind of reclaim that connection with yourself and learn to trust people once you brought Polly into the world? Or was Polly part of that process?
Polly was definitely part of that process because I still struggle
to trust people. And it's what we were talking about before. It's like, I find it really hard to let people in because I have this, that I don't trust anyone, that people would judge me. People will think I can't do something, that I have to prove that I'm independent, that I have to prove that I can do it all on my own. Like, I still struggle now to trust people in my life, to even take care of Polly, to even come over and help. Or it's so hard to explain. Like, even on social media, I find it hard to even post something. Like, I think it's like I've taken 5 steps back, but I know I'm going to take 10 steps forward once I process through all of this. That's what birth and I guess being a mother has kind of done in that kind of journey, done that part of my journey with trusting that. Yeah, it's just taken me a little bit backwards because I have this perfect, beautiful little human that I am responsible for, that I love so much that I literally would die if anything happened to her.
Yeah.
I have to protect her. And how can I trust anyone with her? And I don't know if that's
like she's the part of. She's like the missing piece that you needed in order to fully heal and learn how to do that. That's why we take these steps back, because sometimes we were going the wrong way. And actually the world, like, I think I'm a big believer, like, if we're going down the wrong path and we're ignoring all these signs and gut instincts and all these things going on, sometimes the world pulls us back to go, you're actually meant to turn left, not right. Like, I'm pushing you on the right way.
I love that. That's so true. And I think she is. She is. And every day I'm getting more comfortable and I'm learning how to let people in and trust people, because it's not that I don't trust people. It's just that it's hard to explain. It's so hard to explain. Like, I trust people, of course, but then I don't.
It is that thing, you like have trust to an extent, but then kind of the natural like need for control and like consistency takes over and you kind of want to let anybody else kind of interfere in that process.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm working through a lot of that. You know, I'm going to start seeing a psychologist again and work through, because it's part of my anxiety, I think, as well. Yeah. I was quite lucky I didn't get any postpartum anxiety or depression, but I think the anxiety still is there from obviously pre-pregnancy and from a young age. It's kind of something I'm still working through. But yeah, Polly's definitely helping me. Like, she's just, like I said at the start of the podcast, like, she's teaching me more than I'm teaching her. She's here. Children are here to teach us. I have such high expectations.
Yeah.
And she's teaching me that, dude, you're human. Like,
yeah, you gotta let that shit go. Yeah, 100%. And it's when you let it go that actually you're able to achieve stuff, because sometimes you need to get out of your own way in order to
push
forward. I think it's the biggest thing. As a fellow perfectionist, I feel you. And that links in very well to my final question for you, which I'm going to make it like a dual question so you can go which way you want with this. But the best advice you've ever been given in like a life perspective, and then also the best advice you would give to somebody that's maybe going through pregnancy, having a baby soon, going through perfectionism.
The best advice. Now, I've had a while to think about this, and I honestly still can't remember any.
It's so hard. Honestly, you can just recite an Instagram quote. I won't care.
No. Okay. This might sound super lame, but Dr. Seuss, right? I've always loved this quote. Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter and those who matter don't mind.
I love that quote. I actually got that written in a card. Something wrote that.
How good is it?
Like, I love the whole concept. Yeah, those who mind don't matter. Those who matter don't mind. Wow.
Yeah, that. I like that. And I feel like I try to always remind myself that, but it's so hard because, we care too much as human nature. Yeah. But that's a good one. And Dr. Seuss is always down for some good life advice. So and true. Also another bit of life advice, clean your kitchen before bed. I know when I was in my early 20s, cleaning the kitchen was the worst thing I could ever think of, like doing the dishes before bed and wiping the benches and tidying it up. But no, like taking the time to actually clean the kitchen, do the dishes, wipe the benches. When I wake up in the morning and I see clean kitchen, it like literally makes my day. If I have left a messy kitchen, especially now with a toddler, like I wake up in the morning and I'm like, I want to cry because I'm like, I can't believe I didn't clean the kitchen last night, because now I have to do the dishes, I have to wipe the benches with a toddler screaming, wanting food. I'm like, nah, clean the kitchen before bed. And I started doing this, I think, just in my like late 20s when Bo and I started living together, because Bo is a Virgo and he's super perfectionist, loves to be very clean and organized, where I'm a bit of a, you know, I don't mind a bit of mess. I'm just like, oh, whatever, it's all right. It's just one dish.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's taught me that, like, it just feels really nice when you clean the kitchen. And he's right. So that's my best advice I've ever been given. Right,
great piece of advice. I love that. We've got like really deep and meaningful and then just really life hack.
I thought I'd, just keep that one lighthearted, that last bit. And advice I give to someone, okay, I always, this is easier said than done, but it is literally, it's to surrender, and it's okay to ask for help. And it's, you don't have to do it on your own. You don't have to do anything on your own. I'm going to take my own advice today, ask for help. Like, it's okay to ask for help.
I love that. What a beautiful way to end. Oh, I love it.
And does that all make sense?
Absolutely. I think it's just embodied you as a person perfectly, and especially that bit of advice, and that, like, it's okay to be who you are and to prioritize yourself and to not apologize for decisions you make. I think that's so important. I think, unfortunately, it's something we don't start to learn until a lot later on in life, because we spend, especially nowadays, like, a lot of our earlier lives trying to please, to fit in, to tick boxes, and actually you don't really find your people and find yourself until you stop doing that. So I think that's wonderful. And that's advice, darling.
Yeah, and that's part of the surrender process too.
Yeah.
It's like not having to tick all those boxes and not having to do all that stuff. It's like, just be you.
And this is your moment now. I always give everyone the space to self-plug. So tell everyone where they can find you, what's coming up for Mary Thomas Wellness, websites, Instagram, everything, self-plug, and I'll link it all.
Okay, guys, go. You can check me out on Instagram at Mary Thomas Wellness. I post cute pics of my baby. I pretty much just share. Yeah, she's actually the most beautiful 40-month-old in the whole world. Like, I love her so much. I just share like an everyday life on there. I have an old YouTube channel from my old travel videos, and you know, I even have my video on there about how I healed PCOS, but that channel is called Mantras and Mangoes. I haven't changed that because I wanted to actually keep my YouTube as that, because I'm not actually going to be creating any more videos going forward. Yeah. Well, for now. And my website is marythomaswellness.com. And yeah, I think what's coming for Mary Thomas Wellness is just, I think, being more unapologetically me.
Yes!
Is that the word?
Yeah, that's totally the word. I'm here for it.
And I'm just, because I have literally wasted the last 2 years being so caught up in what I think I should be posting and not posting what I feel like I need to, and being, having that perfectionist mindset. Oh my gosh, I'm going on a tangent again. I'm really sorry. I should just be plugging
myself. I apologize. I love this.
Justifying everything.
Everyone does it, don't worry.
Does, guys. Yeah, so that's what's coming. I'm just going to post more about Polly and I. Bo and I are going to be trying for another baby soon, so I'll be sharing that kind of journey.
So
I didn't share that last time, but I feel like I want to this time. I want to share more about what I'm doing to prepare for conception. I'm going to share more of that and just share more of just life in general and just stop caring what people think.
Yes. Absolute mic drop. I'm here for it.
You're just an angel. Thank you so much for having me. Seriously.
Oh,
like,
no,
it feels like I've just spoken to my best friend.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. Bye. Have a good day.
To stay in the know on Jeans and a Nice Top podcast, follow us on Instagram at Jeans and a Nice Top Pod, and make sure to hit that follow and subscribe button for the latest drops and guest reveals. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on next week's episode, Podditors.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.